Imran Anwar is the president of Imran Anwar Incorporated in New York. He is a New York-based Pakistani entrepreneur and consultant. We have a chance to speak with him on a regular basis, but we haven't always had a chance to tell you that he is the founder of the Internet in Pakistan. He's a well-known media expert on Southeast Asia, India, Pakistan, and the Islamic world. And he is with us now on the Business Line. Hi, Imran.
Hi, George. With an introduction like that, I better have something good to say.
I don't know if the topic lends itself to anything good to say. But we're going to talk about Pakistan and India, and I just wanted to ask you, first of all, these things, and I've said this many times, but these things pop in and out of the news so fast that now everybody's looking in another direction. We've kind of, you know, it was China for a while, maybe now Russia and or Japan, and we lose sight of these very important things, like they went away, like things have just gone away and cleared up. And I know that isn't true, but let me ask you then to kind of fill us in, bring us up to date, your assessment of what current conditions are, first of all, between India and Pakistan.
Well, basically, George, the situation is obviously a lot calmer than it was a few weeks ago, especially soon after the detonations. At the time that I was in Pakistan, around the time of the nuclear explosions that Pakistan conducted, there was a feeling that Pakistan would go ahead, less to threaten a nuclear war with India, but more to reach parity in that region where each small country looks at the big one and considers that a threat. So to Pakistan, India is a threat, and to India, China is a threat.
Right.
And basically everybody uses that as an excuse to have, you know, be like the Joneses, to have what
sure.
the other person has. In the case of nuclear weapons, obviously there is a deterrence value that the Pakistanis were trying to achieve. Soon after that, we did have a little bit of escalation in terms of what's happening in Kashmir, which the United States realized could become a flashpoint. And so President Clinton sent high-level emissaries to both countries to try to defuse the situation. So basically that's where we stand. Both countries are just making the right noises about peacemaking and also about their so-called nuclear capabilities.
Well, let me ask about Kashmir first before we get to some specifics about economics. But that is often referred to as the flashpoint. It's that critical and that volatile between India and Pakistan, heavily Muslim and yet owned by India. And I think that I have established in talking with analysts that if they had a populist vote tomorrow, that they would probably, that would solve the problem in terms of what most of the people living in Kashmir are concerned, that they would go back to Pakistan. But obviously it's going to take more than that, and then there's going to be need to some kind of a compromise resolution. Is there anything on the table, or is there anything that could be on the table, as you understand it, that might work as a compromise for India and Pakistan over Kashmir?
Right. George, your assessment is quite correct. The only thing I would add or amend to that is that Kashmir is not really owned by India. It has been a disputed territory mm-hmm. since day one. The creation of India and Pakistan was based on the British withdrawal from a huge nation where the Muslim majority areas would become Pakistan, and that is what became India, West Pakistan and East Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
which is now Bangladesh.
Now Bangladesh, yeah.
And India remained the predominantly Hindu area. The interesting fact is that Kashmir's population percentage of Muslims was even higher than what constitutes Pakistan today.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Raja, like the governor of the state, happened to be a Hindu person. And at the very last moment, he said he would rather go with India. So one man's vote or decision overrode the choices of millions.
What is the status? Are they a state of India?
There was a border war between Pakistan and India, actually more than once,
mm-hmm.
but basically Pakistan controls, let's say, about one-third of the territory,
mm-hmm.
which is known as Free Kashmir, Azad
mm-hmm.
Kashmir,
mm-hmm.
and India controls the rest, about two-thirds of it, which is called the state of Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah, Jammu.
And even China actually got in on the action. China sits on a little bit of that because of its strategic importance, not because of any interest in having a Muslim population
right.
as part of China.
Right. And it's interesting, when India fired off the nuclear test that started this whole, this latest round of tests and concerns, the international community condemned it many as an immoral act, and the Lama and the Dalai Lama said it was an understandably moral act. And I spoke with an analyst about India at that time, and it was clear that yeah, that's one thing if you're Tibetan occupied by China and you understand why someone might be concerned about the threat of China. But so that's how complicated the issues are. Across that whole region of the world right now.
Right. I was not aware of that statement by the Dalai Lama, but again, I would say that I would be a little disappointed in his making a moral judgment on an immoral act.
But understandable given politics. I think understandable, as I said, that's what my point was. It's
right.
Understandable from his perspective, given what the what he perceives as the immorality of China's occupation of Tibet.
I absolutely agree, but two wrongs do not make a right, I guess.
I guess the point isn't without laboring it. The point is he can understand where India's paranoia comes from.
Oh, absolutely.
As from that
fact,
border, anyway.
What India needs to realize, George, is that, I mean, if I were India, I would definitely worry about China.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that India needs to remember is that back in the 60s, China and India did have a border war.
Yeah, yeah.
The Indians were in no condition to defend themselves,
right,
because the Chinese army literally walked in, sat there for a few hours and literally picked up their stuff and walked back. The idea was that if China had wanted to invade India,
mm-hmm,
it could have done it 50 years ago or
yeah,
40 years ago. The idea was to put, quote, India in its place, that we are the regional power.
Right.
And you are fine, you're a big country, but behave yourself. The irony is that whatever role China has been playing with India, where, hey, we're the real big guys here, you stay in your place, India would like to play that with Bangladesh and Pakistan and Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
So there's irony and hypocrisy all around, obviously, because if Pakistan had Kashmir as an independent state next to it, I'm sure Pakistan would play the same role. That's what makes interesting, politics.
Well, now, just briefly, the international sanctions because of the nuclear testing and problems that were present beforehand economically, part because both India and Pakistan are emerging economies basically at this point, and partly because of the world situation. Where does that leave us in terms of the economic condition in Pakistan specifically, and how volatile a condition is it?
Basically, George, I have been talking to people from both countries, and yes, the economic sanctions are going to take a bite. The bite will be deeper for Pakistan because it has a much smaller economy,
mm-hmm,
and much more based upon trade with the West, especially America. So since America seems to be the leader of this whole sanctions thing, with the Europeans not really, signing on as aggressively as America would like,
yeah,
Pakistan is getting the brunt of the effect. But at the same time, both countries, India and Pakistan, realize and understand that in the long term, America will not stick with these sanctions because trade interests, obviously, like China has been a good example of how business interests will always overcome political issues. But at the same time, a Pakistan that is economically unstable may be willing to sell technology to other countries, which the U.S. might not want, and so the sanctions would have to be lifted in the interests of long-term stability.
Now, that whole sanction thing, a topic by itself, because it's an act that the president was unable to avoid, but the law demanded it. But a very but debatable one, if you listen to the roundtable discussions. We're out of time, Imran. I wish we had more, but we'll talk again soon. And thank you much for joining us today.
As always, a pleasure, George. Thank you.
Imran Anwar, president of Imran Anwar Incorporated in New York.